Mixtape Podcast.
Yeah, what it do? Mobbing with the crew, nothing new. I thought you knew, thought I was falling off. Blessings keep on falling through. Oh, don't panic, dog. Grow a boo, I can't lose. No, I can't lose.
Yo, what is good, Knicks fans? I am your tired and extremely exhausted host, Ja. So focused.
And I'm the energetic, ready to war, ready to talk about Embiid. You feel me? I'm French the Bro host. We would like to welcome you to
the Knicks Take Podcast.
This is episode 86.
This is a weekly podcast where we give you the biggest Knicks news of the week.
Make sure to follow us on our socials. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter /X by searching for The Knicks Take.
Also, make sure you check out our website, knickstake.com.
And lastly, if you love what you hear, please subscribe to us on whatever platform you're watching or listening to us on. Hit the thumbs up button if you are enjoying on YouTube. But most importantly, share this with any Knicks fans who might enjoy the show.
And now the show. Thank you for watching the Knicks Take Podcast featuring Jocelyn Focus and French the Bro host. And as we do every episode, I'll start off by asking you, French, how was your week?
Yo.
Your week was yo?
Boy, I tell you. First of all, I know you don't like me talking about the Knicks when you ask me about how my week was going, so I'm going to just get to it. My week was regular. It was trash. I went to work all week. Mm-hmm. Nice weather outside. I stepped out a little bit. You know what I mean? Like,
you was outside?
I was outside. I was active a little bit. But playoff basketball requires for you to be in the house or in a bar for certain periods of your week, mm-hmm. which I absolutely was. Right. Unfortunately, I made a promise to the people. I said I wouldn't be taking off that wristband from the Chicago Bulls game, the last game of the season where we won 50 wins. Until we got eliminated, and apparently if you shower, those wristbands don't stay on.
No, they're made of paper. Paper is historically weak when it comes to water.
I wish I would have known that ahead of time. I would have just said, I'm not going to shower. But it's all right, whatever. My week was pretty cool. How was your week?
I cannot remember. I'm currently
on drugs.
No, I'm not on drugs. Oh. I'm currently podcasting after an 18-hour shift. Mm. And I came straight here to give you guys the news.
Just
so you know how dedicated I am to this thing.
And loyal.
Sometimes. But anyway, let's just get right into it. Last week on the Knicks Take Podcast, we discussed game one of our first round playoff series against mm-hmm. the Philadelphia 76ers. In this episode of the Knicks Take Podcast, we are going to go over game two, where we battled Philly at home in Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to go over to Philadelphia and talk about game three and what happened there. And then we're going to do some previews of the upcoming games 4, 5, and potentially 6 if it goes that far. Let's just go right into it.
Yeah, let's jump into it.
Game two.
Best Knicks game I've ever seen in my life.
At Madison Square Garden, Monday, April 22nd, 2024. We have the Knicks coming out, much like they did in game one, very, very slow, very mm-hmm. offensively weak.
Tyree started off hot.
Did not look like we were going to see the game that we were expecting to see. We were expecting, all right, we ain't going to see two back-to-back bad Jalen Brunson games where he's shooting poorly and all that stuff. And unlike game one, where I did say I do think that was a bad Jalen Brunson game, I'm going to say game two was a you don't have to shoot well to play well game. although you can probably still make the argument that he didn't play. He could have played better. He could have played less bad. Game one, he had what, 5 turnovers?
Mm-hmm.
In game two, Jalen Brunson did not have 5 turnovers. I believe he only had 1.
Mm-hmm.
And he missed 1 extra shot. going from game two to game one. So he actually shot worse, but this time he played a little bit better, rebounded the ball, passed the ball, did everything he was supposed to do. I would have liked to have seen him pass the ball to open teammates a little bit more since he was struggling, but I can understand he was trying to get himself going.
I kind of had the opposite take. Like,
in what sense?
He had less turnovers, but I did feel like game two was a worse performance than game one. And I was thinking back to what you were saying about his game one. Mm-hmm. And the rebuttals that I had for that was that he still contributed to the game by drawing charges. Mm-hmm. He was still feeding the open man. It was the shot that just wasn't falling.
Great.
I didn't really feel impact of Jalen Brunson until the fourth quarter in this game, to be honest with you. And even though he didn't turn the ball over as much as game one, I felt like in game one, his presence was still felt. Like the same way Embiid doesn't have to knock down shots, but you still have to guard him. And that's going to leave teammates open. That's how they beat Miami in that playing game. But in game two, I just didn't feel like that superstar presence of Jalen Brunson.
Right.
But like you just said, he still had 24, 8, and 6. So,
right.
And he was a +3 from the field. He had a huge play that we're going to talk about in a second into the fourth. But God.
Yeah. Despite his poor play, the Knicks still were able to take command in the second half of the game,
mm-hmm.
Due to the efforts of Isaiah Hartenstein and Dante DiVincenzo, who joined the series. Hartenstein, this is where I kind of disagreed with you, because this was partially on Brunson getting the ball to Hartenstein and getting to that floater. That floater that's been that occasionally when you see him, it's like, oh, you got to look out for that. Like, yeah. You pay too much attention to Jalen Brunson, he's going to get it to Hartenstein and he's going to do that floater and he's not going to miss.
Yeah.
So there was that. And then Dante DiVincenzo, he had a quiet game one, game two. He wasn't as quiet. I'll go into Dante DiVincenzo's series in a second. But for this game, his presence was more felt. He wasn't gambling as much for steals.
Mm-hmm.
He went 4-for-8 from 3, 5-for-10 from the field. And he also had big plays that we are foreshadowing for later on. And
even from the opening, like, half, I felt like he had a way bigger impact than he did in game one.
Yes.
And
yes,
in the second half, we were looking for, like, where's Dante DiVincenzo at, just because he was playing great defense. He had a play where he stopped Embiid, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. He was knocking down his threes, but go ahead.
Yeah. And we'll just get to right to the fourth quarter, where the Sixers made a huge push
mm-hmm.
after losing the Embiid Maxi minutes on the court while Jalen Brunson was off the court. Something that, you know, if you tell me before the series that, oh, yeah, we're going to get minutes with Embiid and Maxi both on the floor and Brunson's not going to be on there, I'd have been like, damn, what is Tom Thibodeau doing? And the Knicks actually won those minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Started off the quarter 79-76. Brunson is not on the court. Maxi and Embiid are both on to start the fourth. And by the time Brunson comes back in, that's with 7 minutes and 49 seconds left, we have built it up to 89-82. Not a big build. You know, it was a 3-point lead to a 7-point lead. But go ahead. What
you just said was just so important. And I just don't want it to be glossed over.
Yeah.
Tyrese Maxey and Joel Embiid on the court when Jalen Brunson, who's the only star for the New York Knicks, with no Julius Randle
mm-hmm.
on the court, and they win those minutes.
Yep.
And the fact that Brunson was able to get some key rest in that fourth quarter because Miles McBride was playing so out of his mind, even though he only had 9 points. He wasn't making all his threes. He didn't make any threes this game.
No.
But the presence that he had on the court with Tyrese Maxey, it seemed to bother him a little bit in the minutes that he was out there. Yeah. And he hit an and-one mid-range shot in that fourth quarter, McBride did. Am I going too fast? My fault. McBride was just balling. I'm just saying, that's why Jalen Brunson was able to get the rest that he did in the fourth quarter. But go ahead.
So what I wanted to say was that I don't think Deuce McBride really went out of wasn't out of his mind. Like,
I think
game one, Deuce was out of his mind. Deuce McBride had a decent game. I was hoping that some of the shooting that he had in game one, he could have brought back in game two. But as you indicated, he was very key to this Knicks victory. I could have brought him up when I shouted out Iheart and Dante DiVincenzo, although he had a good game one, and you could really say they had a good game one. But I could also, with Deuce McBride, I could also shout out Josh Hart, who also had a good game one and had, you could argue, an even better game two, shooting extremely well in that first half.
Yeah, that first half, three. He went crazy.
He knocked
down a pull-up three to force the 2-for-1 late in the shot clock. Not early in the shot clock.
Yeah.
In the second quarter, and that's nothing that you see from Josh Hart. Like, he just came to play this series so far.
Yeah.
And he's been the best shooter and rebounder in both of these first two games.
If we had this Josh Hart against Miami Heat, we're going to the conference finals.
Absolutely.
Last season, last playoffs. Like, he was hesitant to shoot. He was holding the ball too long. And in this series, he's doing neither one of those. Even if he doesn't shoot when he's open, he's making a move that's going to help the Knicks offensively. So before we get into this last stretch, which I kind of wanted to just fast forward to that because it was really the most important stretch of the game, mm-hmm. I wanted to check off some things leading up to this stretch because it's a very divisive stretch. Okay. As we'll talk about after I go over the game.
Talk to me.
You look a little hot over there.
Pause. Now,
you were just saying, oh, I'm cold. Now you're taking stuff off.
Yeah, gotta warm up.
So anyway, so shout out. Really the whole team contributed to this game. But in the fourth quarter, as I said, the Sixers made a huge push after mm-hmm. those minutes where Brunson was not on the court. After the Knicks extended the lead, 89-82. Mm-hmm. And then Brunson comes on the court. They make this push. And then 96-95, I believe the Sixers have the lead at that point. 96-95, huge call happens. Sixers miss. Dante DiVincenzo grabs the rebound. Looks like he's fouled. They call it. Philadelphia challenges. And everybody on Knicks land is like, what a waste of a challenge. He's clearly fouled. Mm-hmm. Right?
And Kyle Lowry wrapped around the shoulder, you talking about?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with replays, it's like, okay. I argued this. I said, okay, listen, if you want to say that Kyle Lowry's hand hit the ball first and caused it to be loose, cool. I would just say that if they called a foul, they're supposed to overturn it if it's clear, if it's clearly not a foul. And from some of the angles that I watched, I'm like, is that clearly not a foul? Like, yeah, his hand touched the ball, but simultaneously he's being pushed from behind. To me, anyway, the way that I saw it. I mean, maybe that's just me wearing my Knicks goggles, but
marginal contact.
I guess we'll be saying that phrase a bunch of times. But
that's going to be an episode title eventually because I just can't. Go ahead.
So anyway, they overturned this call. A huge point in the game.
Yeah.
That goes in Philadelphia's favor. After that, Philadelphia extends the lead 100-96. I'm pretty sure the very next shot, Philadelphia gets a three from Maxey to go up 100-96. Now, we are a minute left in the game. A minute, 9 seconds after Maxey hits his three-point jump shot.
Uh-huh.
Then, a couple of misses. We get down to 47 seconds left in the game. Knicks look like they're struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Can't score. Even though Sixers haven't scored. 4 points is two possessions. Knicks foul, Kyle Lowry. Yeah, at this point, if you're a Knicks fan at 47 seconds left in the game, you're like, Jesus Christ. If he hits both of these, now it's a 6-point game. Now we gotta, we got what, two possessions left potentially. We gotta hope that we could steal the ball and all this stuff.
How'd you feel in this moment of the game?
Man, I thought we was gonna lose. Like, I thought we were gonna lose. I felt very confident up until that stretch where Philadelphia tied and then took the lead. I was like, okay, we're only down two. The Knicks are gonna score. They're due. They've missed the last few shots. They're due here, and they don't score. And then Philadelphia goes up four, and then the Knicks still don't score. And now you put Kyle Lowry on the line. I'm definitely thinking he's gonna knock down both. He doesn't. He doesn't hit both. He only hits one.
He split.
And after that, will be remembered as one of the greatest finishes in Knick playoff history.
Absolutely. If not the best, the one that redeemed Reggie Miller. Like, that's all I was seeing that night was like, oh, this makes up for Reggie Miller, because that's this type of event never happens for the Knicks. It always happens to the Knicks and at home in the Garden. So it just felt like a magical game for me personally. Mm-hmm. When you said you thought we was going to lose, when Maxey hit that three, I felt the energy leave that building.
Yep. And you could hear it in the crowd too. The crowd was just, man, are we about to lose at home?
The crowd was raucous all game long. Third quarter, you hearing defense chants. Let's go Knicks. And with a minute left in the game, it's just crickets in there because Tyrese Maxey got hot. We thinking like, damn, this is another game.
All right, but let me speed it up because we got a whole other game to go into and we got previews.
All right.
And I was going to say the New York Post actually listed a bunch of Knicks playoff performances and it wasn't number one. And I think that you could argue like the LJ 4-point play was bigger. But anyway.
We don't read the Post.
I don't, but, you know, when it's the only news thing that I can access in certain areas, then I have to kind of do that. Anyway, Brunson brings the ball up, fumbles the ball, damn near loses it to Kyle Lowry. That's when I was like, damn, yeah, it's definitely over. We get the ball back.
Yeah. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Dante DiVincenzo gets it. Finds a way to hold on to the ball. Brunson gets to the corner, gets the pass. Philadelphia, to their credit, their defense, gets up on him. He sidesteps and throws up a three. He hasn't made a three-point shot the entire game, ladies and gentlemen. He has not made a three-point shot the entire game. He throws the shot up. It goes doink off the front of the rim, goes right back up, and goes in.
Think Kawhi Leonard against the Raptors.
I'm like, whoo, you cut what was a 5-point lead, could have been a 6-point lead, to two. Now, Philadelphia tries to take the ball out. Kyle Lowry is taking the ball out. I was not aware of the timeout situation for Philadelphia. I didn't think Philadelphia had any timeouts to give. Apparently, they had one. Apparently, Kyle Lowry forgot.
Because he didn't call it. Nurse pump faked it.
Nurse was like this. He said, what coach? No, he doesn't even do this, right? What coach uses just a single finger? Because this is his timeout with one finger, right? But anyway,
I didn't even understand the hesitation.
They should have just called the timeout. You bring the ball up with the timeout to half court. It's an easier place for you to make a pass. I mean, I guess he wanted to save the timeout, but for what? You're up. Right? The worst thing that could happen is, okay, you might turn it over on your side of the court, but they still have to bring the ball all the way up. Like, anyway, he pump fakes the timeout. Allegedly, he did call it. Allegedly. I still have not seen video evidence that he clearly called a timeout.
He lied.
But, they get the ball. Kyle Lowry gets the ball to Maxey. Maxey, before the ball comes in, looks like he definitely pushes Josh Hart with both hands so he can get free, which to me is an offensive foul, but whatever.
It was left with the last 2-minute report.
They did not list that in the 2-minute report.
That's what I just said. It was left off.
Yes.
Yeah.
Pushes off so he can get free. Gets free. Kyle Lowry tosses him the ball. Jalen Brunson tugs at his jersey, which is a foul that they did not call.
I mean, they did it to Brunson all game. Batum especially.
We'll get to that. Which causes him to fumble the ball. He fumbles it. He grabs it. He lands. Josh Hart gets right up on him. Marginal contact on the lower area. And his momentum causes him to fall because there's a lack of space for him to move. At this point, Nick Nurse, again, looks like he wants to call a timeout. And he turns around. And while he's turning around,
Josh Hart's like, hey.
Maxie goes like this to pass the ball from the floor. He's on the floor, sprawled out. And instead of corralling the ball and holding it, he puts the ball out. And Josh Hart says, oh, what a nice present, sir. Thank you. I'll take that from you. And snatches it simultaneously while Nick Nurse is calling timeout.
I didn't know what Tyrese Maxey was doing.
Like, he didn't know what he was doing.
You're trying to throw the pass between his legs. It's like,
so
heard you were looking for this, sir. Right. Here, take it.
So Josh Hart takes it, gets it out to Dante DiVincenzo, who's open for three. Dante DiVincenzo misses.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, that was the shot right there.
Yeah.
Until I see Isaiah Hartenstein barreling his way from the three, I don't know where he came from. He came out of nowhere.
Top of the key. And then you see his big ass jumping.
A sea of Sixers right under the rim, and he jumps over all of them to grab this rebound.
Mm-hmm.
Comes back down, falls, passes it out to OG Anunoby on the wing.
Through one of the Sixers players' legs. I caught this, and not many camera angles caught this. He did exactly what Tyrese Maxey was trying to do. And it worked.
He got it to OG. OG passes it back to Dante DiVincenzo, who barely moves from the spot that he shot the first time. He's like, I'm knocking this one down.
Yeah.
Takes the three again. Cash. Knicks go up by one. Now, at this point, my heart is jumping out of my chest. I don't care if the Knicks win. I don't care if the Knicks lose. I'm just happy that they're not going down without a fight.
Yeah.
The Sixers get the ball up the court with Tyrese Maxey, who is one of the fastest guards in the NBA. You don't want to see Tyrese Maxey with a head full of steam trying to get to the basket,
mm-hmm.
especially since he can shoot from three. So you don't, if he stops and he pulls up, you don't want that. So you have to pick your poison. They throw a screen out there. He gets past his defender. Now we have Tyrese Maxey versus Isaiah Hartenstein at the top of the key. Not an ideal matchup when you're only up one.
So you would think.
It's almost like you're guaranteeing that they're going to go up by one with his layup.
So you would think.
Maxey passes by Isaiah Hartenstein, goes for the layup, and Hartenstein, I don't know if it was a block. They never listed it as one. It looked like one. When Maxey throws the layup up, it bounces off the backboard, comes back. Knicks get the rebound, get it to OG. OG gets hit with a foul. He goes to the foul line, knocks down his two. Knicks up three now. Now, Sixers have a chance to tie it up, take it to overtime. They bring the ball up. I think Maxey brought it up, either Maxey or Kyle Lowry. They don't have a shot. They get it to Embiid. He's the only one. If he doesn't put the shot up, then the game's over. He puts a shot up, shoots three. Clank. Does not make it. Knicks win. The most amazing finish, like, that in recent memory.
Mm-hmm.
For me, in Knicks playoff history.
Without a doubt. Did you see the Monica McNutt reaction to last?
I did not get a chance to really, really watch it. But
that shit was crazy. It was like identical to my reaction during that part where Tyrese Maxey lost the ball. Dante missed the first three.
Mm-hmm.
And then once Isaiah Hartenstein got that rebound and kicked it to OG and I saw Dante at the top of the key, it reminded me of this play that Dante did in Golden State where he hit the exact same. Like, he missed the first shot. I think Draymond got the rebound, passed it out to him. Hits the game winner. And then once I saw, like, they ran the exact same play for Dante again, I'm like, oh, this game is ours. This game is ours. Before he even shot the ball, and then he hit that shot, and the garden
erupted.
Like, bro, crazy. You would think that the roof exploded. Like you could hear how loud the crowd was through the TV. And any other playoff game that you're watching, you don't see that same energy.
Right.
The Denver Nuggets won the championship last year, hit a game winner the same night, and that crowd, I'm like falling asleep. Like, damn, this shit look boring as hell to be at this game. I feel bad for Jamal Murray.
So let's go into the aftermath of the game. Right?
Talk to me.
After the game, there was a lot of talk about whether Maxey got fouled, especially by Philadelphia players, by Nick Nurse, Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid said, you got to call a foul. Everybody was calling timeouts, which, you know, I've looked at it a couple times and it did not look like everybody was calling timeout. I didn't even see him. He said he was calling a timeout. I didn't see that. I got to look at that again. And the only person that I saw clearly was trying to call timeout was Nick Nurse, but it was not clear. Like, if you've seen, I'm not sure I'm going to call a timeout, I'm not sure if I'm going to call a timeout, and you got your finger a millimeter from the hand, and you're not saying timeout, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. But there was complaining about that everybody was calling timeout. It was complaining that Maxey got fouled, which he did. I'm not going to say he didn't get fouled.
No, like,
he got fouled.
Everybody's getting fouled. It's the playoffs.
At the end of the day.
That's why, like, I don't understand this crying shit that they're doing.
At the end of the day, he did get fouled. Like, just because, you know, whatever.
The refs ain't going to determine the game.
We can admit that he was fouled.
They could have called timeout when he was on the floor, too. Like, that's not the reason they lost the game. That's my point. My fault, God.
Right? You see, I wrote crying.
They just got
I wrote
me
crying.
Tight.
I wrote crying here on my notes.
Just you wrote like, it really neatly too. Let's show the people the notes.
I don't think they could. I don't know if they could read my handwriting from that far. But I wrote. It was a lot of complaining, like to the extent to where, you know, I'm gonna get into that later. Matter of fact,
talk to me.
So missed calls, accurate. Missed timeout, maybe. I broke down the game just now. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of places where both of these teams could have assumed control of this game before we even get to this little stretch here, right? For the majority of the second half, the Knicks had control of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So for me personally, like, if we're talking about like the last possession of the game and something is very blatant and clear, then I can understand the complaining.
Right.
This was not that. There was time in this game for Philadelphia to reassume the lead, to prevent the Knicks from scoring,
get a rebound,
to get a rebound, everything, to steal the ball. There were multiple opportunities where it did not matter what the refs called or did not call. Secondly, Joel Embiid proclaims the Sixers are the better team, that they should be up 2-0,
mm-hmm.
and that they're going to win the series.
Yeah, he had his head down the whole time, too.
What?
When he said it.
Yes. There's a reason for that. We'll get into that later, too, hopefully. What are your thoughts on the aftermath of the missed calls and time? Actually, you already kind of just said it, right? We agree on this. There's a lot of crying, a lot of complaining.
Yeah, they bitches.
But you know, just say a little quick something, and then we'll go into game three.
Miles McBride punked Tyrese Maxey, snatched the ball from him.
I forgot about that too.
I forgot about that. I'm like, we got to talk about that, because when I saw that play right there, I feel like the Knicks look at Philly like they soft, like they just play hard every step of the way. In Philly, like you just said, they had an opportunity to rebound the ball after Dante missed. You see Isaiah Hartenstein running from the three-point line through four Sixers to get that rebound. They all just looking at it. Embiid's the biggest guy on the floor. His knees give him trouble. So he probably don't feel comfortable jumping up in traffic to go for a rebound. So the Knicks are taking full advantage of that. Isaiah Hartenstein had a tough first game. He came back and basically won his game for the Knicks. With his play in the fourth quarter, getting that rebound, getting that stop against Maxey, and he was playing ball the whole game, basically. I feel like the biggest takeaway from this game was that Philly they know they got to be perfect to beat the Knicks.
I disagree with that.
They got to be perfect because if you get in a performance like this from Embiid and Maxey, both going for 30 points, and Embiid had 10 rebounds, Maxey had 10 assists, Embiid had 6 assists, but the guys around them, nobody else scored over 10 points outside of Tobias Harris. And, like, it was a nip and tuck game. Like, it kept going back and forth. OG, he started to find his fitting on his team, I feel like, in the second game a little bit more. I didn't really feel his presence too much in game one.
Right. I didn't either.
I don't really like him on Maxey.
No, I don't either.
I like for him to be in the paint so that he can meet Maxey there more so than having Maxey just keep beating him off the dribble because he's just too quick for OG. I'd rather have OG on, like, Tobias or somebody and just play help defense the whole game because Maxey's not going to kill us from three, in my opinion, for a game. He might hit 4 or 5 threes, but that's not going to be what his game is predicated around. His game's predicated around driving, his quickness, getting to the paint, and finishing and hitting a mid-range pull-up. I didn't realize he was that good in the mid-range. It seems like he's knocking that shit down every time he gets that shot in this series. And I just feel like OG shouldn't be playing cat and mouse with him this whole series. I would like to see that adjustment. That's basically, like, just the biggest takeaway. I just love that the fight that they're playing with. They protected home court. And the next game in Philly, it changed the series, in my opinion. So if you're ready to get into it, I could set the tone right now.
Yeah, it's on you, bro.
So, at the Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia, the New York Knicks went in there after they embarrassed the Philadelphia 76ers. And like you said, the Sixers were complaining the whole press conference after the game in game two. It's irrelevant, but Kelly Oubre got into a car accident after game two. I thought that was funny.
It could be relevant, but we won't talk about it on this podcast. I don't think we'll have enough time. But yes.
Yeah, but I mean, he just addicted to car crashes, but I thought that was funny. And I felt like in the opening minutes of this game, you saw what the intentions were from Philly. They was trying to show that they're going to play physical, tough, and they kept trying to draw fouls. They kept trying to bait the refs into fouls. And Bede was playing reckless. Guy.
I'm going to slightly interrupt you and say, I don't know if I would say from the opening minutes, but once it became clear that this was that this was not going to be the same way that it was from game one and game two, where the Knicks were trying to find their offense while Philly can just get their offense automatically. Once it was clear that was not the same, then I think that that's when they started trying to impose their physicality. But go ahead.
I feel like that was all in the first quarter, though.
It was.
Yeah.
But the first quarter, you could see from jump. Right. They scored the first point and we came back and scored the next field goal. And they scored and then we scored. And it was a back and forth game. And Philly was like, damn, this is not going to be like it was in game one and game two. We have to slow this down.
And the way that they chose to slow this down was by starting to play dirty. Joel Embiid was playing reckless. I guess they used the Miami formula.
Even before Embiid, though, Kyle Lowry.
I missed that.
You missed the flagrant foul that Kyle Lowry got on Dante DiVincenzo where he smacked him in the face.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't miss that.
That was the one that set the tone. That was the one that, because Dante got a cut on his eye after that play. He went up for a layup. Kyle Lowry didn't even go for the ball. He just smacked the shit out of him.
I don't even know if I would say he didn't go for the ball. It was just very clear that he had no chance at getting the ball. So, like, what are you doing?
He got little arms. He wasn't getting into that ball. He knew what he was doing.
That's what I'm saying.
But he knew what he was doing is my point. But after that flagrant foul, it seemed like the very next play, there was another flagrant foul that they had to review. Like, there was at least three flagrant foul reviews in this first quarter alone. And Bede ran into Hartenstein trying to kick him in the groin on some Draymond. Like, you know how Draymond tried to be subtle with it when he tried to run into somebody and kick him in the groin? That's what Joel Embiid did.
I don't think that was in the first quarter. Maybe it was.
No, that was in the first. Because that's what made Hartenstein sit down for Mitch. Then Mitch comes in.
I'm sorry, you're right.
Go ahead. Does the same thing to Mitch.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mitch don't even react to it. He just goes down on the other end. Knicks get another stop. And B thinks he got fouled. And now because he thinks he got fouled, now he want to play even more reckless. So on the other end, he tries to draw a charge from OG. He ain't get the call. Mitch gets the ball under the paint. He goes up for a two-hand dunk. And Embiid's going to grab his legs while he's going up and try to pull him down, knowing that he just came from ankle surgery.
A very dangerous and reckless play.
And then once Mitch goes down, Embiid pushes his legs away. Like, yep. He don't even care that it's going to be under review. And that was telling to me.
Mm-hmm.
And once they reviewed that call right there and it wasn't a flagrant two, I saw what kind of game this was about to be. Because after that, he wasn't remorseful. Dante was like, what you doing? He getting in his face like, what you going to do about it? He talking to all the Knicks players like he trying to fight and trying to get players ejected. Like,
mm-hmm.
That's soft to me because, like, if you're the MVP, you're the leader of your team, and you result into dirty tactics trying to get players injured, trying to get players suspended, and you at home, that's corny. Like, just play the game. You the MVP. You went out to score 50 in this game afterwards because the refs wouldn't eject him because this the playoffs and you know how that should go.
Immediately after, like, it was like, all right, offensive foul on Embiid. It looked like he hit him in the groin. Kyle Lowry rakes DiVincenzo's face. Joel Embiid looks like he's trying to hurt Mitchell Robinson. Could have been a flagrant two. Could have been thrown out the... I was like, oh, we in their head.
Mm-hmm.
I immediately said it. We're in their head. Like, they are... This is recklessness. This is cheating. This is doing whatever you can to win the game. That's all I'm going to say for right now. I'll let you take over.
I just don't understand how the media doesn't report on this type of shit either.
Some are.
Because, MSG is. That's
going,
about it.
Let's keep going with the game.
But after this play that he tried to end Mitchell Robinson's career, he gets a flagrant one, stays in the game, and continues to play dirty after that too. Because he hit Mitchell Robinson again, which actually did injure Mitch.
I don't know if... Mitch got injured, he fell on his leg.
Yeah.
There was another... I think what you're talking about, like, there were several plays where it's like, why are you playing like this? Like, this is not being aggressive to win the game. This is being aggressive recklessly because you're frustrated because you're not getting fouls. And you're going to hurt somebody, if not yourself. That moment when he put... I'll talk about it later. Go ahead, keep going.
He's too big for that. Like, you're too big to be falling around, flopping, all this extra shit.
What I was
like,
going
to
say was, when he pulled down Mitchell Robinson, he would put himself in danger of re-injuring his knee for no reason.
That'd have been the karma that they needed.
Mitch was not going to fall on him. Mitch wasn't going to jump on him. He was behind Mitch. You pulled him towards you.
Mitch still tried to avoid him, too.
You could... Right. And... We'll talk about it later. Go ahead.
Embiid's a bitch, long story short.
Keep talking about the game.
I don't want him on the Knicks no more. That changes my whole philosophy about training for Embiid. He's a bitch.
All right, I'll continue for you then. So after that, the Knicks are not... the Knicks are unfazed after all of this stuff. Even when Mitchell Robinson goes out after he gets hurt, the Knicks are unfazed and end the first half up by three. Regardless of all the antics, regardless of all the fouls, regardless of the complaining, the temper tantrums, all of that, smacking the floor, crying on the court, Knicks are still up at the end of the first half. And then what happened?
The Knicks stayed poised, still held the lead going into halftime, and then. The Sixers realized, like, oh, if we play like bitches, we not going to win this game. So we got to just shoot some threes. So Embiid came out, knocked down a bunch of threes. Maxey hit some threes in the third quarter. They built them a little lead. And they were able to hold it, even though nobody felt safe the remainder of this game. The Sixers crowd, every time the Knicks would go on a run, you hear their hearts
and we didn't even
drop
talk
into their stomach. Like,
and we didn't even talk about how Knicks fans, how y'all showed up.
Yeah, they did.
Y'all showed up and made your voices heard over there in Philly. That was cool to hear from the start of the game, mm-hmm. how some points of the game, it sounded like we were in MSG mm-hmm. and not in Philadelphia. That was really, really good. So
yeah, they had a whole Knicks group behind the Knicks bench, and it was loud. They was making sure to make their presence felt. And I'm looking forward to seeing that in game 4-2. I was thinking that this would be 4 home games for the Knicks, but I didn't expect the crowd to be split.
Right.
In Philly of all arenas. Like, right. Philly's a raucous crowd.
They got a crowd over there.
Yeah, but their players are just bitches, though. But the Sixers win this game, 125-114.
Did you go over that third quarter?
Yeah, the third quarter with the flurry of threes from Embiid and them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't really enjoy this game, to be honest with you. After the refs was doing what they doing, I felt like they had too much of a presence in this game. Well, Embiid had more free throws than the entire Knicks roster. Like, you see what this is. Like, we see what it is.
After this game, Tom Thibodeau, unlike the coach on the other side, made no excuses to start off his conference. And that's the main difference between these two teams, right?
And the two coaches.
You know, Philadelphia complaining about calls, about missed timeouts and all that stuff. And Tom Thibodeau is like, listen, we need to be better. We need to be better. We lost this game because we were not good enough. Point blank, period. There's no, the refs are you know, it's fucking inexcusable. Like, that's what Joel Embiid said about the first game. Yep. In this game, there was none of that. You know, there was none of that. You won't hear that from Jalen Brunson. You won't hear that from any of the players on this team. You know, they'll speak candidly. They called what Joel Embiid a dirty play, which it was. They mentioned how Mitchell Robinson, you know, he could be injured on a play like that, which he could have been. He wasn't, luckily, but he got injured anyway later on. And you can't
put Simmons in to start the next game.
No.
And just start kicking knees.
At the end of the day, the thing that I would most want is for the Knicks to continue to be like this and to beat Philly anyway. Right?
Yeah, their post games is what gave me the most confidence, because I thought they were going to come out and just complain about the flagrant fouls, but they came out like,
and look,
this is regular. This is what we expected.
Just because he didn't blame the refs for the loss, Tom Thibodeau was still able to call him out.
For sure.
He still was like, look at the free throw disparity.
Embiid is on a free throw line 21 times.
We're sending them clips about what's happening with Jalen Brunson, and they're saying it's marginal contact, but, you know, Embiid will get 21 free throws, which he got in this game, and they'll say the same marginal contact is why he's getting to the line. And, you know, at the end of the day, you have to adjust, which is true. You have to adjust to the way the game is being officiated. You have to play with your head on your shoulders. There were some things that the Knicks didn't do good. You know, not all of those fouls on Joel Embiid were phantom fouls. A lot of that was still poor execution by the Knicks on defense. A lot of people putting their hands down when they need to just stay still. A lot of people not moving correctly. A lot of, you know, Dante DiVincenzo a couple of times was gambling in this game. And he had another game that was more reminiscent of the first game. Only this time we didn't have a Deuce McBride knocking down all the threes. So here's what I'll say. I'm going to get into I was going to do the rant at the end, but I'll do it now mm-hmm. because I don't know how much time we have left.
Probably we only have 47 now.
Probably about 13 minutes. But yeah, I expect my rant to be long. When I came into this series, I thought about the fact that there was no real hatred for Philly,
mm-hmm.
right?
Because we never really faced them in the playoffs before.
New Yorkers don't like Philadelphia, mostly because of football and other sports where there's a New York-Philly rivalry. But when it comes to basketball, we've admired Joel Embiid. You said before you wanted Embiid on the Knicks.
Ship sailed.
We've, you know, we don't really have nothing against Philly. We didn't have anything against Philly before this playoff series. And I was like, you know what? This is going to be really good because we're going to have a very entertaining first round against the team. And even if we lose to this team, it is going to be respectful. We're going to be, you know, I'll be okay. We lost to a team that was better. And two games into the series, I'm just like, yo, fuck this whole entire team. And it's not, I want to be clear. I've been thinking about how I want to do this podcast today. Like, I've thought about being angry and being like disrespectful and like cursing out all of the Philadelphia fans, but I don't feel like that's what this needs to be, mm-hmm. right? I would like for it to be, maybe, you know, I could still be a Knicks fan and I could still call out things and I could still speak accurately and I could still be like, okay, this is what it is. Be fair, be balanced, be you know, obviously I have a bias, but still try to maintain accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I want to start, I started off with coming into this series, this is how I felt. And hearing all of these complaints after game two, and then seeing the response of some of these guys after game three, and seeing what Joel Embiid did at the beginning of game three, and everything is just kind of like, yo, I really don't, man. A couple quotes that I've read, you know, and obviously, you know, social media is not the best way to analyze a whole fan base. So, you know, it's not really fuck the entire Philadelphia fan base, right?
And think to yourself before you say these quotes. Would a dog say something like this? Go ahead.
So, after game two, right? Something I kept hearing and seeing. Yo, y'all wouldn't have won if Brunson wasn't getting a Jordan whistle.
Philly fan said that.
Michael Jordan whistle is what they said about Jalen Brunson, right?
When Embiid's on their team.
And this was stated, right? And in games where the free throw disparity was not really, it was barely negligible. The Knicks had a free throw advantage of one after games in game two, right? I wouldn't call what Brunson got a Jordan whistle. Does he sometimes exaggerate contact so he can get a foul? Yes. Joel Embiid does the same thing.
He has to exaggerate contact because he never gets the calls. Brunson does.
Regardless of that, if you're going to call a call, it has to be consistent, right? Regardless of whether the person exaggerated the call, whatever, call a foul, or don't call fouls. And in game two, it appeared that the refs were not calling fouls. Right?
Mm-hmm.
There were a bunch of fouls that we have already admitted that Jalen Brunson was not getting off of the ball. He was being grabbed. He's being pulled. And there was no foul. There was no whistle. And if those were called and y'all looked at it and y'all were going to be able to say that, okay, those were fouls, you wouldn't be able to complain about game two. But whatever. You're entitled. That's your team. I looked up how many fouls Brunson got in game two.
And 12.
In game two, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many did he have in game one?
He had...
I think it was nine. Neither one of those numbers...
Are 21.
Don't come close. Do not come close. And as Tom Thibodeau said after game three, a lot of the fouls that Jalen Brunson got in game three were in the fourth quarter when you could say that the game was already decided after that amazing, listen, it was an amazing third quarter by the Philadelphia 76ers. It was an amazing third quarter. And despite what Joel Embiid did or did not do in the first half, that third quarter determined that game and the Knicks were probably losing regardless. So I want to put it out there. I'm not saying that the Knicks would have won if not for... No, I'm not saying that. That third quarter that Philadelphia pulled out there, amazing. They don't need all this other stuff in order to win.
The biggest...
If anybody's getting a Jordan whistle in this entire series, Embiid got it in game three. What were you about to say?
Just the biggest takeaway from this game to me. Mm-hmm. They put campaign in that third quarter, I believe, and he hit three threes.
He made his presence felt in the first half, too.
I felt like that was the biggest difference in this game for Philly outside of Joel Embiid going off of 50 points. They haven't been getting any help off the bench. And I think campaign was just like a shock sighting for this series because he hasn't come off the bench all series. And D'Anthony Melton was listed as available after he's been injured for however long he's been out for. So I think like just that aspect, little tweak, having the campaign come in was just a new look for the Knicks that they weren't prepared for. I don't really see game four having any type of surprises.
You're rushing ahead again. I'm not even done with my quotes. I only
my
did
fault,
one.
My fault.
Knicks were lucky to be up 2-0. This was another quote I heard after game two. So from that same sense, the Knicks were lucky to be up 2-0. In game three, Joel Embiid performed at least 3x where you wouldn't, nobody would argue if they called a flagrant on any of these acts. One of them they actually did. If they call the flagrant on a second act, he's thrown out of the game. Mm-hmm. And nobody would argue that in the one flagrant he did got, if they called a flagrant two, he would have been thrown out the game. That wouldn't be argued.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we could reasonably say the Philadelphia 76ers are lucky to get a win and not be down 3-0. Because without Joel Embiid, they're not having that third quarter.
Absolutely.
Right? Without his 21 free throws, right? I'm trying to remember what the disparity in free throw.
They had 33. Oh, in the quarter you talking about?
In the entire game.
They had 33 and the Knicks only had 19.
So that's a 14-point difference potentially. In free throws.
Fact check that, y'all.
19 plus 14 is 33.
Oh, okay. You graduated. My fault.
The Knicks lost by how many?
11.
So you get rid of those 21 free throws. I think it's reasonable to say that the Knicks make this a close game and potentially win.
Like, they don't got to get rid of the free throws. If you just call evenly on both sides.
I'm just saying without Embiid. For the second half of this game, I think you can reasonably say, because the Knicks played a great game.
Right.
Philadelphia just played a better one in the third quarter. The Sixers are lucky to have to be down 2-1 instead of 3-0.
Absolutely.
Refs gifted them a win. This one is the this one is the top. Like, really? Y'all want to go there? The refs gifted them a win. I've already gone over game two. I listed how things went. I specifically mentioned how far up the Knicks were before they went on that run.
Mm-hmm.
I pointed out different parts of that little section there where, hey, you could have called a foul there when Jalen Brunson is getting pulled and tugged on and no foul is called. Hey, that Dante DiVincenzo overturn, I'm not really sure that you should have overturned it. Not saying that maybe you shouldn't have called it in the first place, and then, hey, there's nothing I could say, right? But mm-hmm. You called the foul. Was there enough to overturn it? I don't believe so. So you guys were lucky there. It was a one-point game at that point. You guys were not up 5 by 5 points at that point. You guys were only up by one. You guys could have grabbed the rebound, solidified the game. Kyle Lowry could have made both his free throws. Made it a more difficult game, or at least turned it into overtime if everything else plays out the same way. There are several things at the end of game two to where you could say Philadelphia could have done this better. And if you went to national media, the other people were saying it too. Kyle Lowry should have called a timeout. Tyrese Maxey has to hold on to the ball. You have to be more demonstrative when you call a timeout. There are several things that had nothing to do with the referees.
Mm-hmm.
That caused Philadelphia to lose this game. So these are things that I'm hearing and seeing. And the thing that has infuriated me the most is the nonchalant response to what Joel Embiid did. If one of the Knicks did what Joel Embiid did, we would come on here and we would, or at least I would.
I'm not with injuring players.
We would have admonished it. We would have been like, "Yo, there's no place in the game of basketball for that." If they say he's suspended for a game, we would be. I'm not hearing that. I'm not seeing that.
It's not even under review.
Y'all are just like, "Oh, stop crying." This is what we're doing? You got me to the point to where I'm like, "Yo, Mitch should have just sat his ass on Joel Embiid's knees and hurt him right there." But I don't want to say that because I don't want to advocate for somebody being injured. But the way that some of you guys are talking is just unsportsmanlike, is not fan worthy. You guys are embarrassing yourselves as fans, and it's not cool. Like, this should be what I thought it was going to be. A friendly battle between two teams that are in the same vicinity, in the northeastern part of the U.S. We can take a train and go back and forth and watch the games. Everybody should be enjoying themselves. Everybody's predicting 6 games, 7 games. It's going to be a hard-fought series. And whoever wins. And there's going to be no...
Now it's
like, yo, Philadelphia has risen to the top of most hated teams for New York Knicks fans. Joel Embiid has risen to the top 3, top 4 most hated Knicks opponents.
I still hate Miami more.
I'm not saying they're number one. I'm just saying they went from obscurity to, oh yeah, whatever. They've won. They've done more than us. Whatever. We respect them. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, they're above Atlanta.
Yeah, for sure.
You want to say that Miami is still above them? Sure, but that can always change, right? When Jimmy Butler leaves and Spoelstra is no longer the coach of Miami Heat, are you still going to feel that same level of vitriol? Because even last year, we had gripes against Miami. Nothing they did was to this level.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I look back, when I see myself looking back 2-3 years, I'm going to be like, nah, fuck Philadelphia. Fuck Joel Embiid. Because there's no place in the game for any of this. The fans are reacting poorly. Their MVP player, who's an amazing talent, who deserves all of the credit, he did some bullshit. The coach is crying left and right.
Media ain't talking about none of it.
What are we doing?
Like, it's on national television on TNT, and they won't even mention the fact that Embiid is trying to get players hurt.
Because they're too busy talking about the fact that he has Bell's palsy, which was very evident after game one. I was looking at him in game one, and it's like, why is he not blinking his eye?
Smack the other side of his face now.
Like, you know, and I was going to come in here and be like, yo, this Jim Ross ass motherfucker. But I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that.
You want me to do it?
No, I really don't.
All right.
Like, there is a moral high ground that we can have here. And we can call out the bullshit, which is what I just ended up... I'm going to call out the bullshit. This is bullshit. Knicks fans would never do some of the stuff that the Philadelphia... it's not all of you, right? It's just what I'm seeing on social media. But we would never stoop so low. If we complained about fouls in one game, and then the Knicks players did something that was egregious in the next game, we would call it out. And we would say there's no place in the game for that.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, some of you guys don't have the couth to do the same. So I'm very conflicted about the rest of this series. I wanted to talk specifically about that part of the dynamic that I'm seeing on social media. You've already kind of broached the topic of how the national media is kind of brushing over it, which, you know, it's fine. I'm fine with that the national media is brushing over it.
I'm not fine
with
it.
For the most part, they are all admitting that was a dangerous play. He could have been ejected and maybe should have been ejected. But
if y'all do all that for Draymond, say something. But Draymond, don't pick and choose. I hate that shit.
Draymond does it all the time, and he has a history of such things. Joel Embiid also has a history for you know, flagrants and stuff like that, but he is not looked at in the same way for obvious reasons.
But he did it in this game multiple times, which is what should change that perspective, is what I'm saying.
It should start to change the perspective, yes.
It's he's not even trying to hide it. Like Draymond, he was doing it, and he tried to hide the fact that he's doing this to people.
Right.
Joel Embiid is not hiding it.
I'm not upset at it. You know, you look at some of the amazing performances. He has these amazing performances without doing all this stuff. I'm not surprised. If he does it again in one of these upcoming games in order to get a first round win, I would expect national media to really start disrespecting Joel Embiid and stuff like that.
I will. Like, I'm gonna do it.
Not disrespecting him. I'll jump out the window in that instance. But questioning his impact on the game, I'll say.
We gotta go to a game and start talking crazy to him.
We're starting to run a little long, but I'm just gonna say that I'm gonna try to maintain this level of professionalism, I guess, to just fairly and accurately, review the games. Try not to be too disrespectful, like.
I'm the younger brother, y'all. I'm ready to go there.
I know you are, which is why I have to be here. listen, if we're talking about fouls and stuff like that, and crying, all right, cool. Nobody should be saying, oh, why y'all crying after what Joel Embiid did? Nobody should be doing that. And if you're doing that, you're wrong. Like, there's no reason, there's no place. Let's move on. Let's get to game four.
This Sunday
at 1:00. I don't know what we're going to try and put this episode out as soon as possible. So I don't know when this episode is coming out. Maybe the game will have just finished by the time this game is done. But 1:00, Knicks will be back in Philadelphia. I'm going to say that the same thing that I was telling everybody before game three. I want the Knicks to come in and be super aggressive. I think that it's unfortunate what happened in game three happened, because now if the Knicks come in super aggressive, it's not going to look good. And it shouldn't look good. But at the end of the day, it's what the Knicks have to do. They have to respond to what happened in game three. There's no other way around it unless they decide that they're going to just knock down every single three. I think if you're not going to be super physical, you have to look to get Dante DiVincenzo more shot attempts. He was averaging at least 10 threes a game, every game before the playoffs. And I don't think he's attempted 10 threes one time in this playoff series. I think the most he has in attempts is 9 in game 2. You have to get Dante DiVincenzo going. You have to get the threes down. You have to make it a game where Joel Embiid is running around as much as possible. You have to make it a game where we're bumping Joel Embiid as much as possible, because if you're not going to do that, you have to shut down Maxey and let Joel Embiid get what he's going
to
get.
Yeah, because at the end of game two, Embiid didn't look like he wanted to touch the paint at all. In game three, he seemed like he was shooting all the threes in the third quarter just so that he had some stamina left in the fourth.
Yep.
I think they need to be more aware of that going into this next couple of games. Because like you said, they need to tire him out. One of his weaknesses is conditioning and just being able to stay healthy throughout an entire series. That's always been his issue in the previous playoff runs. So I'm still confident in the Knicks in this series.
I'm going to say that the Knicks are going to win game four. What say you?
I think so, too. I think the rest of the series is ours, to be honest. The next two games is ours.
I'm not very confident in my game four prediction. But
okay. Why is that?
Because I think that part of the key in trying to slow down Joel Embiid is Mitchell Robinson. And I think Joel Embiid knew that. And I think that's why Joel Embiid partially was really going at Mitch. And we don't know. We didn't even say this, but Mitchell Robinson left the game in game three and did not return and left the arena in a walking boot. So I've been refreshing my browser for Mitchell Robinson updates, and we haven't had any, as of this morning. I don't expect him to play. If he does play, it'll be important, because some of those shots that Joel Embiid hit, Mitchell Robinson wasn't going to be in the game for those shots, but he would have, if he were in the game for those shots. I don't know how many shots Joel Embiid hit in the fourth quarter, but if he even hit one three-pointer, if Mitchell Robinson was on him, I think he was missing that.
He's got long arms.
He's a bigger body. He's a taller person, and he has longer arms than Isaiah Hartenstein. Hartenstein cannot bother Joel Embiid unless he's right up on him, which is how he got a couple of those fouls.
Yeah, he didn't play smart in this game after he got those first couple of fouls. I feel like as soon as he came back in, he tried to play aggressive still. And
that's part of why Embiid got as many fouls as he did. It wasn't just some of the other stuff, although that did happen. But it wasn't smart execution on the parts of the Knicks when it came to defense, especially on Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
Mitchell Robinson's going to be key. So that's part of why I'm not, confident. Dante DiVincenzo hasn't had the Dante DiVincenzo game that we have been expecting. I've been calling game two the Dante DiVincenzo game because of the shot that he knocked down at the end of the game, because that was so important. It was more important than the Josh Hart shot in game one.
I think he had his entire game two was good. That's why.
And we didn't even talk about the dunk that he had in game three.
On Embiid.
That potentially could have shifted the rest of the game, and Philadelphia made sure that it did not. But he had an amazing dunk at the end of the first half. And outside of that, he was very quiet. So we need to get Dante DiVincenzo going. Without Julius Randle, somebody has to step up besides Josh Hart for the scoring load. Philadelphia has two all-stars, one of them a former MVP, and both of them are playing out of their mind. We just got Jalen Brunson. Somebody has to step into the Julius Randle role for the second half of the season. That player was usually Dante DiVincenzo. It has to be Dante DiVincenzo in game four.
I don't agree with that, mainly because I don't think offense was the issue. We didn't even really speak about Jalen Brunson. He's had an awful first two games scoring-wise. Mm-hmm. Game three, he came out, was a lot more comfortable. He had 39 points, 13 assists.
He was great. He was amazing. He had the best game. He had a really great game.
Mm-hmm.
30-plus points. It was his best game. It was the Knicks' best game. It was the Knicks' best game. We didn't talk about Jalen Brunson because we've been focusing on so many other things.
Yeah, Josh Hart had a
We're not
four,
talking about the game
pointer.
Anymore because we're running long. Okay. It was a great game for the Knicks. The Knicks need another great game, but we need more from the other players. We need more because
it's defense we need, I feel like.
Philly has kept the games close in the first two games. And we got lucky that we were able to pull them out with Jalen Brunson playing poorly. Philly's secondary players were not playing great in the first two games. Their secondary players played great in game three. If that continues in game four, we will need Dante DiVincenzo to step up alongside Josh Hart to continue doing what he's doing. You're right. It wasn't offense. I don't think the defense was poor either.
Yeah, but campaign can't come off the bench and have 11 points. Like, 11 points is what we lost by. And I feel like campaign and Kelly Oubre
we're
and
not
all
gonna,
these guys, 50 points from Embiid, it needs to be stops, and it can't be relying on the refs.
And
to
I think
try and draw fouls.
We were going to go into game five and six. I think all of these things that we're seeing applies for all of these next games. Campaign got what he got because he is not respected. And he shouldn't be respected. So if he's going to get 11 points, he's going to get 11 points. You're going to focus on Joel Embiid and Maxey because they make the whole offense work. So either you stop one of them, or you outplay them. That is, it's not, the defense could be better. Yeah, sure. Defense is never going to be perfect. The Philadelphia 76ers offense was perfect in that third quarter. And the only way that the Knicks were going to maintain a lead was if their offense was perfect, which it wasn't. That's what I got. That's what I got. They played a good game. The Knicks played a good game. You're right. The offense wasn't the problem, but their defense wasn't a problem either.
It was the problem.
No. Philadelphia was hitting shots even when they were contested. Not poor defense.
My problem.
They missed maybe two or three rotations in that whole quarter.
Mm-hmm.
But those two or three rotations that they missed didn't cause them to... Like, the Philadelphia hit more shots that were tough shots than they made shots that were wide open. That's not a defense problem. That's just that's good. Only way we're going to beat that is if we're just as good.
Yeah, but are the Knicks missing wide open shots? All the shots that they're making is tough shots, too. It's the playoffs.
Them,
there aren't going to be many.
Some of them were. Some of them were.
It wasn't many.
McBride missed a couple. I don't think Dante DiVincenzo has had many wide open shots, but he has missed a couple of those wide open shots. So But that's why I say you need a second guy to replace Julius Randle's production, because you need another guy. So, okay, some of these tough shots that Jalen Brunson has to take, they can go to somebody else who can take some of that load off. Okay, Jalen Brunson can up his efficiency because he doesn't have to take as many shots. And he was very efficient this game, but we've seen him be more efficient. And he can be more efficient if some of his shots are given to somebody else, like Dante DiVincenzo, who he doesn't need to be super efficient to be a killer from three, to score a lot. And that's kind of what we need. We need, if it's not going to be somebody bullying the paint and hitting tough shots inside the way that Julius Randle does, it's got to be Dante DiVincenzo scoring more from three.
So you got us winning game four, just not confidently?
Barely. I barely say that we will. And that's honestly, that's more so because of my Knicks fandom than me being confident in the game. Like, maybe if I wasn't a Knicks fan, maybe I would say I think Philly's going to take it and it's going to go all the way to seven.
And your only reason for not being confident is because of Mitch?
It's because of Mitch. It's because we're missing Julius. It's because Dante DiVincenzo has not been able to put up at least 10 threes in a game. It's because I think that we were, it's very hard for the Knicks to win games with Jalen Brunson missing as many shots as he did in the first two games, and we won two of them. So if I look at it from that perspective, the Knicks were lucky to win two games, but they didn't because
lucky
there's that
crazy.
Because how many games have the Knicks won where Jalen Brunson played like ass?
This
Not
is what
many.
The Knicks is, though. Like, the Knicks have players that step up whenever they're guys.
Course,
like, that's what they're known
but
for. I wouldn't say it's lucky.
Of course.
Like, they play with heart.
Of course.
And that's what they won the games with.
Yes. Those two things can be true. They've won the games with heart because they wanted it more than the Philadelphia 76ers. But this Philadelphia 76ers game plan was to shut Jalen Brunson down and make somebody else beat them. And it worked. Like, it shouldn't have worked. They got Joel Embiid and Tyrese Maxey, and just off of that, they shut down Jalen Brunson. They're supposed to win those games. It's luck, partially.
I disagree, but we got to move on.
Josh Hart hitting as many threes as he has.
He
hasn't done it all season.
That doesn't mean anything. He's hit multiple. He had multiple games where he hit four threes. Like,
it is lucky for the
Knicks.
It's
not consistently throughout the season.
It is lucky for the Knicks to have Josh Hart break out the way that he has. Because he could have taken all those shots and missed, and we would have been not surprised.
After the game, Tibbs said that.
Correct.
Josh Hart works on his threes just as much as Miles McBride. So that's why I can't view it as luck.
Did what I just say, was that correct? If he missed those shots, would we have been surprised?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
But he doesn't shoot that
many.
They
are lucky. The Knicks are lucky that everything has broke right. And they have manufactured their own luck, to be fair. They have manufactured their own luck because they've worked so hard. Because they have heart. Because they make sure to do all the little things. They have manufactured their own luck. But they are still lucky to have been up 2-0 when Jalen Brunson was shooting so poorly.
Let me ask you one last thing about Josh Hart, and then we can move on.
Quickly.
Would we not be surprised because we think Josh Hart is a terrible shooter, or he just lacks confidence to shoot shots?
Man, we could have talked about that anytime. Our producer is biting his nails off because we're going so long. Listen, Josh Hart made those shots because he worked on his shot, because he saw what he did so poorly last year. He was part of the reason why we lost to the Miami Heat, because he wouldn't take some of these shots that he's taking now. And he has made himself into the player he is in this series. And that's why Josh Hart shot so well. That is accurate, yes. And if he would have missed anyway because of all that stuff, we would not have been surprised.
If it was a fifth, we'd all be drunk.
And the Knicks are lucky. You know, there's a little bit of luck in everything. Part of the winning in the playoffs is luck. You can't say that you make it all the way to the NBA Finals without a little bit of luck, without something going your way, somebody getting hurt. If Joel Embiid gets hurt in game four, it's unfortunate, but the Knicks would be lucky because now the path for them is easier. You need a little bit of luck. If you know, the 76ers are lucky that Joel Embiid did not get tossed from the game. You need a little bit of luck. There's a little bit of luck in every game, and that's where I'm going to leave it off at. All right, this is where we got to sign off. I'm not going to ask you any questions. I'm just going to let you handle your business.
You don't want to talk about game six? Nah, let me stop. No. Yo, it's a long episode. Playoff basketball is here. We're going to have a lot more episodes like this, I feel like, because the longer this playoff run goes on, I think there's going to be a lot to talk about, but we'd like to bid you adieu. Thank you for listening to...
Hopefully there's a blowout. The Knicks Take Podcast. Peace out, y'all. Yeah, what it do?